There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, put your mittens on your kittens, and away we go. Another hour of live local talk, Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Hey, y'all, I'm Sean, and glad you're here. Text line, phone line, same number, 343-0106. Also, same phone number and text line you would use to interact with Kennedy for Alabama tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. And how about this for a segue? My friend Robert Kennedy Jr. from Kennedy for Alabama on the phone with us right now. How about that? Hey, Robert.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean. Of course, my mind instantly went to the memes of Bernie Sanders and those mittens yesterday that have been floating around the internet all day today.
How you doing? I'm doing good. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much for asking.
Have you seen the meme? It's on our Facebook page. There's a generator out there, and Leanna, who's so brilliant on Facebook and running our Facebook site, you can give an address to this meme, and it'll place that cutout picture of Bernie Sanders anywhere you want it. Like, there's pictures of him in front of the Floribama. There's pictures of him in front of the radio station. You can just go find a place, and you can place Bernie Sanders right there.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Modern technology at its best, right?
It's why if productivity levels are down in the United States, it's because we've been doing this. All right.
But of course, that's what the internet's for, right? It should be for that kind of fun stuff, not for us demonizing each other.
True. I have not heard from the Sanders camp if they're upset about Bernie Sanders being placed, you know, although I got this reaction from the missus last night. She said, did he not realize it was an inauguration? Did he just dress like to go get milk from the grocery store?
Yeah, but he was the only one that was practical. You know what I mean? I mean, he was warm, had his little down jacket on and the mittens. So I was like, go, Bernie, go.
So the inaugural speech yesterday, I started the show off last hour with this because I saw Chris Wallace. And I've been a defender of Chris Wallace for a long time. I said, you know, this guy is not, he's here to be a journalist. When he'd interview President Trump, people get so mad. I said, his job is not to be on Team Trump. His job is to ask the questions, and then we get to make the decisions. And then he went in and I would have had this reaction for whomever, but he went in this over-the-top fawning reaction to President Biden's inaugural speech. And I thought he really did himself a big disservice as a journalist, number one, doing that. Number two, maybe I'm just not smart enough that was the best inaugural speech ever. I wasn't feeling it. What was your feeling? Did you like the speech? Do you score it 1 to 10? Where do you score it?
So I didn't see the speech from end to end, and I'm speaking off having seen clips versus the whole thing. And so I'm always a little skeptical in terms of complimenting or commenting on clips.
Right.
But I think it struck the right tone. I think he touched on the right things, and I think it set a stage for us to be able to go forward. I think some of the commentary that I heard about Chris Wallace may have said something like it was the best speech in the history of all speeches.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I just don't have enough context to either critique or compliment that analysis. But all in all, I think President Biden kind of set the right tone going forward.
Okay. So I would hope the inaugural speech for whomever is elected president is one about unifying, but at the same time, the talking heads and others are passing along a message that is anything but unifying, who they're going to go after. And, you know, I started off with John Brennan was talking about the libertarians. You know, I was like, wait a second.
You guys get in trouble.
Yeah, we're lumped in with authoritarians, white supremacists, bigots, nativists. So I guess those of us that want liberty are of question now as well. But I hear this, and you know, if the tone would be, hey, we're going to go after the people that want to overthrow the government. We're going after this white supremacist. Yeah, we got Klan people or Nazi people or all these people are going to go after. That's right. But when it's this is what it seems like to me. I want to get your reaction. When it's this overall, like we're going after all these people, I'm worried who gets to make the definition of what that is. And that's what we're doing. We're going after people.
That's a bit of a hard one, and I'll explain to you why. So I think part of our natural problem whenever we get into either political discourse or racial discourse is we have a tendency to lop everybody in the same bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you reflect on some of the events from the summer and some of the protests that we talked about that were perfectly legitimate, and how that got lumped in with some of the anarchist activity that kind of went into anti-fascist activity, et cetera, et cetera. You saw there was this movement to kind of say the Antifa plus BLM, right? Mm-hmm. So people were just kind of sticking the two together. And I think what you're seeing is a continuation of that same application. So you have people who are legitimately opposed to President Biden for any one of a number of reasons. And some of those folks served as apologists, if you will, for some people who would be defined as white supremacists. And I think what we're seeing here on the tail end of that is just people getting lopped together. But as you alluded to at the top, none of that really gets us anywhere when it comes to advancing policy. So I think we'll be better served at whatever point that we move beyond this.
Yeah, and I just wonder what that looks like. And you said so many things that I want to touch on here. Let's talk about this, because you and I talked about through the summer. We've talked about Black Lives Matter, the organization, the movement, and then protesting, and then what had happened in some cities after dark with mm-hmm. with rioting, looting, mayhem that had gone on. Well,
sure. In
Portland and I think elsewhere last night, but I know Portland, there were, I guess it's rioting that was going on there, and they went after Democrats there as well, right? The DNC office or something like that there in Portland. And I just wonder, because people have said this, they said that President Trump, and this is, I think, an in-depth discussion that might need to happen at a later date, that he didn't, it's not that he was in QAnon or these white supremacist group, but as long as they were, you know, going to do something that he didn't disagree with, he wasn't going to push them away. Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of the wink, wink, nod, nod.
Okay.
Kind
so
of the way that I would
if,
refer
so
to it.
If that argument's made, don't you believe that Democrats were doing the same thing? Speaker Pelosi was doing the same thing, not with the actual protesters, but not having much to say about the anarchy going around because it seemed to be doing, you know, something against Trump. The enemy of my enemy is my ally. Right. And I feel like there's a big similarity here and a glaring one that should be addressed.
I actually don't think it's even close to the same thing. So let me acknowledge the part that I think is important. So there was some language that was coming out over the summer where people were saying, hey, if you oppose to somebody, get in their face and yell at them and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then there were some of the entertainers who were, you know, referring to people in language that was inappropriate, et cetera, et cetera. So all of that was inappropriate. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I think what ends up causing us to have a difference of opinion on this particular topic is a fundamental disagreement on the underlying issue. And so people can always cross the line, and there's no set of circumstances where you're going to be able to justify throwing a Molotov cocktail into a police department, right?
Right.
You're just not going to be able to do that.
Right.
But talking about what was happening as an organic movement of protest, and again, I'm not talking about the knuckleheads who are opposed to everything because we know they exist, but that was actually an organic movement that was coming out of people losing their lives based upon interactions with law enforcement. And fundamentally at the core, that's different than the stuff that was more recent, which was predicated upon stuff that we know to be factually false, which was this notion that the election was stolen. And so I think you have to go back to the root cause of what caused the passion that existed in society and really acknowledge that as we're trying to dole out accountability for the things that we know, you and I both, on both sides of the political spectrum, were completely inappropriate.
But, you know, for a lot of Americans, and until, which I don't know that Washington will do it, does like the inquest on what happened. There's a lot of people that think that the election was not legitimate, right? They think that is, and you can say they find this example, that example, and use it as you know, the level. Those examples mean the rule for everywhere else. The same thing I think could be said when you look at certain police departments, and let's talk about the murder of George Floyd. You look at that and say, that was, I don't know any fair-minded human being that saw that and, you know, that was excusing that. But then that grew to mean more than just that. And not just the movement in the summer, but it took everything in and said, this is what's going on everywhere, and this is why law enforcement should be defunded. This is why, you know, all law enforcement is this. And I think it's that same thing. I think there is
exactly,
a comparison.
It's exactly the same thing. It's saying the 99, using 99% as an example. We're saying the 1% has now caused the 99% to be viewed in a light that's less than favorable.
Yeah.
And that's the larger issue of what it is that we need to figure out, you know, as a society. And so I'll have to go back and just challenge one thing you said, because I actually agree with most of it. And so I agree with the notion that there are some people who believe that there are some problems with certain aspects of our electoral process. I think you're stating a truism there. But the question becomes is whether or not that belief was based upon something that was true or something that was untrue. And that's the part that I think is really challenging in that particular conversation, because we know when you look at the events that happened this past summer that you had individuals who had an interaction with law enforcement, and in this case, the African-American person was dead. And, you know, that's a statement of fact. As to whether or not the police were liable in that situation, or if there was something that perhaps could have led to a resolution that did not involve a loss of life, we can debate that all day long. But it's that fundamental fact that I think actually distinguishes one situation from the other.
Hey, just joining us, talking to Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama. Tomorrow night, what's up on the show?
Yeah, we're looking really forward to tomorrow night's episode, because we're not going to be talking politics.
What?
You know what I mean? It would be good to take a break away from that for a minute. Yes, yes. Tomorrow night, we are very pleased to have Mr. Ira Banks, who is going to be joining us. And he is the dean of the Leadership Mobile 2021 class. And we're going to talk about leadership. And we're going to talk about our community, our Mobile, Alabama community in particular, and how that program helps to build networks among a generation of leaders that are ultimately going to move our county forward. And then in addition to that, we're going to have Mr. Steve Barnett, who is a small business owner of the Flip Flop Bookshop in Daphne.
Right.
And he's going to spend a little bit of time talking with us as well. So, yes, it'll be good to, at least for a certain portion of the program, take a step away from politics, talk about what's happening here in our community, and how we can make it better.
There we go. That's tomorrow night at 6. And as we wrap here, something that – so the stuff that Robert and I talk about off air is usually about government spending on things that we're questioning how much they're spending or why they're spending at all. You and I both were talking earlier about this grant here for folks out at South Alabama to study firearm safety or something to that effect?
Mm-hmm. You know, and this is one of the areas where we're kind of driving outside of our lane from a stereotypical standpoint, because I'm obsessive about spending, right? From the time that I first announced running for office to the present day, I'm in the fiscally responsible camp. So I want to know that if we're spending any government funding, there's a goal, there's success criteria, and there's an evaluation time frame. And so when I heard about this $1.8 million going to University of South Alabama to study among a gun owner population ways to increase safety, et cetera, it just kind of left me scratching my head understand, you know, how that dollar flows from the federal government and then ultimately lands in some individual's pocket. And so if we're going to talk about fiscal responsibility, you know, and our overall debt structure and stuff like that, I think it's important to at least challenge each one of these individual things as they come out.
You know, I think what makes this work better is all of us talking about this and saying what might be uncomfortable, because somebody might be scared of saying it because they'll say, well, Robert and Sean don't care about gun violence. Eh, wrong, wrong. Robert and Sean care about gun violence. We're just going to question when you, how you spend the money and do the studies. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's a problem in the world, right? And this is good because people can understand that you can say something and question spending or question a methodology without throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And that doesn't mean we don't care about gun violence. Am I doing that? Is that fair?
I think it's absolutely fair, but I'll actually do you one better, and I'll apply it to the conversation you were having in the last segment. So when we talk about the issue of minimum wage and what it should be, what the dollar amount should be, and then how that ends up impacting the small business owner here locally versus how it may impact somebody in another part of the country where it's not quite so significant, I think it's very reasonable and rational to have those conversations. And to think of it beyond just the first order effect to the second and third order effects as well. And that doesn't make us any less committed, you know, philosophically to where we sit from a party perspective. But it really gets us from the theoretical to the pragmatic. And the more that we can have conversations about that, the better off we'll end up being. Because until we start bringing in more money than is actually going out of the U.S. government, our debt's going to continue to pile on top of each other.
I could even follow that math. I understand that equation. Robert, it's always a pleasure, and I'll be tuned in tomorrow night at 6.
All right. Give my best to everybody. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
You too. Tell the family I said hi.
Bye-bye.
Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, 6 o'clock on Friday nights, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5 online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, remember, check us out Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, on the Facebook page, that meme generator where you can place a cutout picture there of Senator Bernie Sanders wherever you want. A friend of mine sent me one earlier that's just, it's Najee jumping over Bernie Sanders sitting there with his mittens. It's just gold. It's gold. It's the best thing I've seen today. Thank you to my buddy who sent that to me. That's good stuff. You can check out that little meme generator on our Facebook page. Remember, you can interact with us over at Twitter. It's twitter.com. Just find at FM Talk 106.5. They have not removed me yet. That's me personally. I don't know if they remove me sometime in the future. But right now, I'm still up there. So check us out there. And Instagram, where we occasionally put pictures up. We're going to do more Instagram now going forward. By the way, too, did we mention the safer at home order? So they continued that. No big surprise. Governor Ivey continuing the safer at home, the mask order. That's moving on. Oh, and Tim, oh my gosh, Tim, if I had more time, and we will do this and remind me, Tim, next week, because Dalton can, if you call Dalton at 343-0106, he'll tell you this is exactly what he and I were talking about as we were coming back from Alabama Auto Clean. We dropped the van off there, keep it looking good, and we're on the way back. And this minimum wage discussion that Dalton and Dan were talking about this morning, get to Tim's text, said, what I don't understand is they keep raising this minimum wage, and these minimum wage jobs were not intended on people making a career out of them. They were supposed to be stepping stone jobs. There's only so much you can do for a person that does not have any skill or trade. All right, so, oh my gosh, we've got 1 minute left here. Tim, you're right. The problem is a couple things. Number one, I'll say just as a dissenting opinion, I'm on board mostly with you, Tim, but I have to make sure that I'm being fair. Are we the people subsidizing companies out there? Now, this is an uncomfortable conversation, but one I think it's worth having if you want to be fair. Are we the people with low minimum wage? And let me go back in the fact that I'm not pushing for a $15 minimum wage. I'm just asking this question. Do we subsidize companies that have lots of minimum wage employees? Because if they can't earn above the poverty line on minimum wage, then think about all the government programs, right, that are available. So that person that probably wouldn't be able to take that job can take that job because we the people are subsidizing other things. But the question is it the decision of the federal government to decide what that number is, and what ends up happening when all those jobs get automated. Another show, we'll talk about it. All right, be right back. News is, well, right now. Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday, and more from Dr. Bill's forecast coming up in just about a half hour. And welcome back to the show. The mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennan, joining us now. Mayor, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on.
Oh, anytime, Sean. I just, again, appreciate y'all talking with me today.
Yeah, man, I always appreciate you picking up the phone. And I want to say this. So when we're talking about the vaccine access in Orange Beach and here in Alabama, but I want to point out that this subject that we're talking about right now, it was, oh my gosh, I want to say months ago, even plural months ago, we're talking about the vaccine rollout, and I had a caller or a texter or two at that point said, hey, what's going to happen? And I think they use a snowbird term. They said, what's going to happen when we have a limited supply here? What's going to keep, you know, will snowbirds, they asked me the question. They said, will snowbirds be able to get it just like the Alabama residents? And at that point, I had no idea. I said, I don't know. I figure it'd probably be for residents first. And now here we are in January 2021 talking about exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, if someone had asked me that question, I'd said, are you crazy? There's no way anybody's going to get it. It's for Alabama residents. We're in Alabama. That's what it's about. I mean, it would have never crossed my mind that we would be giving these doses, which are very precious and so limited, to someone that in maybe just a few weeks is fixing to exit the state and take. So they essentially take that dose with them. It does us, our community, and
right,
that individual, our folks that need it, absolutely no good.
Yeah,
that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's a good, I mean, that's, let's take it out of the idealistic discussion, which we can do, but the pragmatic discussion is, if you're going to get herd immunity, you need that vaccinated person in the mix.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it's all about, and that's what we're trying to achieve so we get back to normal. But the thought that, and it's not reciprocal, because, you know, we got a large group of snowbirds down here taking a part of that number, whatever it was based on, of doses we've got. We don't have equal number of Alabamians headed to Michigan or Illinois or Chicago or New York to hang out for a couple months to get theirs up there. So, you know, and I don't know what the percentage is. I'm guesstimating and talking with some of the folks who's 20-25% were out of state.
25%?
I got an 80-something-year-old neighbor two houses down that's in really, really poor health. He hadn't got a dose yet. And it just didn't make any sense. I'm in the land of Oz again.
Well, it's, you know, we talked about Florida on the show last week and kind of vaccine tourism. And I know Governor DeSantis says, well, if people own property here, then, you know, they would qualify. But they weren't carding anybody. So, I mean, we're just working off the honor system there, I guess. What about here? I mean, do people, I mean, they don't have to present any ID. Even if it changed, I guess there's no way to find out if they're full-time resident or.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing, but right now they're asking for no type of residency status or anything of that nature. You know, really, to me, if you don't have an Alabama driver's license, you don't live in Alabama. You
right.
know, I got transit people here all the time, and for me, if you don't have that driver's license, then you haven't committed to the state of Alabama. You committed somewhere else. If your homestead is not here in Alabama, then you've committed somewhere else, and that's where you need to get your vaccination. Not here, not taken away from those that have planted their flags in Alabama, that are contributing to the community year-round, annually. And I sort of had some, obviously, ugly messages from snowbirds, and it was all about the money. You know, they spend money down here, so no, it's not about the money. It has nothing to do with the money. First off, if you know me, there's not a principle I stand on has anything to do with the money. It has to do with what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do is Alabamians first. And I just can't believe that we would even be in this position having this discussion.
Well, I mean, because that's exactly what, you know, we've been hearing on our social media pages and our text line after your discussion earlier. People were chiming in saying, well, what is the mayor saying to those people that come spend all this money in Orange Beach? Doesn't he want their money?
If it said somebody, see, that's what's funny. The irony there is, you hear these folks, when you're talking about shutting the economy down, well, you can't put a price on a life, so we need to shut it down. Well, now they want to put a price on it, because if they come down here and spend money, then they're worthy of the vaccine to save possibly their life. So you can't have it both ways. But in, for my, for, as far as I'm concerned, if my mom and dad were still alive and they weren't able to get it and snowbirds were, I mean, how would I live with that? I mean, how could I can't even reconcile how that makes sense, especially when these guys are fixing to leave. But it's no different than spring breakers. You know, if I got to get their money, I got to put up with the nonsense, then I don't want their money. That's not what we're about.
Yeah, you've been consistent on that. There's no question. You've had a consistent approach on your community there. But the, you know, the, where it starts to get in the gray for me, and I don't know that I have even have an idea of what my opinion is, but let's say we get down to the, what is it? There's 1A, 1B, 1C. Let's get down to where it's younger people, right? It's time for everybody can get the vaccine or younger people. And at that point, if you have the older snowbirds, does that change at all? Or is it just like if there wasn't the scarcity?
If there no, if there's enough vaccine to go around, then we have no problem being a community servant and allowing them. But that's not the way it is. So I don't want to confuse the two. This is strictly about being limited doses and having to prioritize who gets them. They have the ability to get them in their state because the doses in their state is based on their population. If our doses here are based on our permanent population, but yet we got a 25-30% increase in Baldwin County from snowbirds, then we're underserved. And that means my community is underserved. So that's the point I'm trying to make. If you're going to base it, if you want anybody to get it, then you need to take our winter guest into consideration just like you would in the summer. Mm-hmm. And give us additional doses to cover them.
Yeah, I would make that, and I'm sure I'm way behind you on this, I'd make that argument to Montgomery. Don't y'all love all this revenue, Montgomery, that comes out down here? It sure be a smart move to have these vaccines down here.
Yeah. The second part of this is the distribution. After what I saw happen in Daphne yesterday, we started digging, trying to find out what the plan was. And what we found out was the plan was an off-the-shelf 10-year or older mass vaccination plan. But what they found out yesterday in executing that plan was they didn't have enough nurses available. Well, wait a minute. How do you not know that you don't have enough nurses if that's the only folks that can vaccinate? You don't have enough of them. Didn't you do a tabletop? Didn't you do a walkthrough? And it's like I said earlier, we do walkthroughs and tabletops constantly to deal with hurricanes and disasters and things of that nature. So you pull this off the shelf, it's 10 years old, and then you realize, well, we've got paramedics, we've got pharmacists, we've got all types of medical practitioners, we've got publics, we've got all different venues. Why have we not modified our plan, or why are we not looking at modifying it? We've had, 2.5 months now to prepare?
Right.
9 months that we really knew the vaccine was on track? I don't understand that. I don't. I mean, we have to live prepared down here. So it really eats at me is how is it they weren't ready and they can't do a better job of distribution?
Yeah. And right. It didn't sneak up on anybody. Are there any best? I know as a mayor, you probably look at other places. Is there anybody that any other state or there's best practice going on somewhere else? You go, okay, maybe we try that.
Well, I mean, Florida DeSantis is doing a great job over there. I mean, we were tabletopping this morning looking, talking through. We got the wharf. We got our ballpark parking lot. We can do a drive-through. We can bring our paramedics out, nurse practitioners. We can get it set up into Publix. There's a Publix here, Gulf Shores, Foley. We could distribute this stuff in a very, I just don't think it's rocket science. But to think that you're going to set up a clinic and have 75 years old or older, driving in the morning to stand in line to get an appointment to possibly get a vaccination is the most absurd thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah,
I mean, that's almost as laughable as the residency thing.
Yeah, if that wouldn't have been thought about, one of the things that I've been troubled about is the online registration here. I'm not trying to be ageist here, but 75 and up is probably the group of Alabamians, Americans in general, that have the least percentage of people that do stuff online. I know there are plenty of people that are 90 that are whizzes on the web, but isn't
you're
it fair?
Not being ageist, you're being a realist. I mean, I'm 64 and I don't want to get on. If my daughter's not around, I don't get on the computer because I get lost and completely illiterate, to be honest with you. So you're exactly right. But how hard is it to set up multiple 800 numbers, switchboard? I mean, I mean, come on. It's not, again, I don't see it as rocket science. I really don't.
So what are you hearing anything from Montgomery saying that, hey, we're because of this, we're going to give you more, or here comes some more? I mean, do they communicate with you? Nothing?
Yeah, we've made a request for a phone call. We haven't got one back from Dr. Harris. I don't always like to be the one coming off and throwing the hand grenades and picking a fight. But dadgummit, somebody's got to do it. And it truly is life or death. And it truly is something that we should not have to be having this discussion about right now.
If you're just joining us, talking to Mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennan. So what do you do next? What's tomorrow? You said your tabletop. What's tomorrow for Orange Beach?
Well, we're going to keep trying to find out what the plan is, because what they did in Daphne is unacceptable. So I'm hoping the media will stay on top of this with us until we get something that makes sense, because we need to be preparing right now for when we don't have a shortage of vaccine, when we have more vaccine than we know what to do with. Then we need to have a timetable, just like we set up during the storm or after the clear. We need a timetable to have everyone in Baldwin County vaccinated that needs to be vaccinated. And in between, we need to be setting up the prioritization of who and how we're going to go about picking who, and what is our reasoning behind who gets vaccinated. See, for me, and I may be wrong, it's just one man's opinion, but the only people that need vaccinations right now are those that are at risk of death.
Mm-hmm.
That's those over 65 and anybody that has a medical condition that depresses their immune system. That's where every one of them go. As far as I'm concerned, my first responders wouldn't be getting it. School teachers don't get it. No one gets it that's not at risk of dying. And essentially under, I think, 55, your risk of dying is less than getting killed in a car wreck going to work.
So
if our goal is to eliminate death and ICU admissions and ventilators, then we need to focus on getting it to those people at risk for that situation.
So even frontline, you're saying even frontline healthcare workers, you would put them back behind these people that have a direct risk of death?
I'm generalizing now. I'm generalizing.
Right.
It may be that where you've got short staff and you have limited, you can't have a COVID across the board and you lose half your staff. But even then, if you're limited mm-hmm. and you give over half of them to people under 40, what have you accomplished in eliminating death or ICU admissions? Because most of us under 40, not me, but most under 40 are going to get sick, get well, and go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Most under 40 may not even have symptoms, may not even know they had it. That's my whole point. If we're that limited, then we need to worry about those at most risk, highest risk. So, I mean, I've had the argument that, well, what if you have it runs through your police department, you lose half your police department? Well, that could happen. But the odds are the age of my police department is such that the majority are not going to be out more or down within a couple of days, 3 days. But this quarantine, man, this is a six-hour discussion, Sean. You know, when you quarantine for 14 days, how do you ever get to herd immunity?
Right.
None of this makes any sense to me because, I sometimes hear the term science denier. Well, I'm beginning to think this worse than a science denier is science fraud. And so much of this is a narrative created that doesn't follow what the study. And being a physical therapist, I can read a study.
Right.
I can see what the literature says. And the literature is all over the place. All over the place. And so to me, common sense, pragmatism has to play into this. And I go back to vaccinate those at risk of death.
Do that. And not until all those people are vaccinated do you start moving on to the next.
That would be, that's just me.
Yeah,
that is how I would do it. Again, there's always an exception to every policy. That's why I say policies are made to be broken. They're really, nothing's in stone. And so if there's an exception, if I got South Baldwin Hospital up here and they've got a limited number of ICU folks, a limited number of this segment of the hospital, and they are at high risk, and they can't afford to lose anybody, well, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But every hospital, the medical community, can then help us decide and walk through this. But we've had plenty of time to talk this through and have that plan put together. Who is at risk, and who is at risk to creating greater risk for those at risk if they're out with the disease. So I don't know. I don't see rhyme or reason to what they're doing, to be honest with you.
Mayor Kennan, we appreciate you chiming in on the show with us, talking about this. Also, I'm going to ask, when you do, and I'm not saying this facetiously, I'm not serious, when you do get information from the state or whomever to talk through this, will you reach back out and we can talk about it and find out what's next for folks in South Baldwin?
I will. And, you know, I want to make something clear. I'm only talking about the situation where the vaccines are severely limited. You know, when first responders and healthcare workers should be right at the top of the list as soon as there's enough to go around. But if you don't have enough to go around, I'm talking about that's where we need to distribute it to the high risk.
Don't
so
you
I just
hope
want to make sure to clarify that.
And I appreciate that. That's good to clarify. Yeah. And I hope pretty soon the discussion is, hey, Sean, I got so dang many vaccines down here. Come on. I don't care if you're from Poughkeepsie. Come on.
Absolutely. And I hope we all get there. I really do. And I think we will. We'll see.
Mayor Kennan, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely, Sean. Thank you.
All right, there he is. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kennan had a discussion that I told you was coming, right, on the allocation of the vaccines and how they end. This is what the mayor's doing here. So you're going to hear lots of other mayors, lots of other state reps. This is, over the next few months, it's going to be our reality. I'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Look at the one of the monitors in here. President Biden speaking, says things are going to get worse before they get better. Hot take. That's what I used to tell my parents come report card time. Say, yeah, they're going to get worse, but then they'll get better. Of course, it always worked that way because I didn't leave my room for months on end. All right, phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Go to the phones. Michael is in Spanish Fort. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today, my man?
Man, I'm all right. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, agree 100% with Mayor Kennan. The state has dropped the ball. You know, I'm a 50-year-old person without an immune system. I take drugs to...
Oh, wow.
Shut my immunity down because of a pulmonary lung disease that I have.
Oh my
and
gosh.
If I was in any other state around us, I would have gotten the vaccine a month, 2 months ago. So
have you thought about that? You thought about doing like a run over to Florida and just getting it?
You know, I don't want to take away from their state.
Man, you're a strong person not to do that with your situation. I'll drive
you. Exactly. So literally, I've been living in my hunting cabin in Bruton for the last 6 months.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I think Alabama just did a horrible job. My neighbor's daughter is in nursing school. And about a month ago, I said, why don't you go to your professor, your teacher, what have you, and suggest that y'all get with the state and have our nursing students give out shots? Well, lo and behold, a week later, she called me and said, they're going to do that. And it just is beyond recognition why the state has not reached out, or the city, to Bishop State or the local nursing schools to have people there to be able to give the shots. It's just, so I understand Mayor Kennan's frustration.
Well, and I appreciate your situation, and hopefully sooner than later, Michael, that you get that vaccine.
Sean, I appreciate it. I love your show, man. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for checking in. And so many texts here. People suggesting have Chick-fil-A do the distribution that you're talking about. You know, one of the things on why, like Michael's ideas or common sense ideas, regular folks like us ideas don't get done is usually what I have seen from it. I can't speak for every situation, but looking at this over the decades, it's often... these groups are scared to act because of liability or some kind of public relations problem or something. Like they often there's not movement because there's fear. Fear causes the lack of movement out there. I'll tell you what, we'll leave these texts for the shows that follow. Check it out tonight or tomorrow morning with Mobile Mornings, because there's a whole slew of texts. I'll get the reaction here. I'll talk with you on the text line, but we'll get those on the morning show probably tomorrow with Dan and Dalton. All right, Paul Feinbaum show happening next. Talk to you tomorrow. It'll be Friday.